somewhat of an oddity. I say good morning. The Senate Resource Committee has been saying good afternoon when we start our committee meetings during the regular session, but it is a good morning on this Friday, April 20th. Let the record reflect it's about 3 minutes after 10 a.m. on this Friday morning, and we do have the entire committee with us today. Beginning on my right, co-chair Senator Wagner, Senator Wilikowski, Senator McGuire, and on my left, we have Senator Stedman, Senator French, and Senator Stevens, and myself, co-chair Senator Pasquin. We have before us, actually in the audience, we have Senator Ellis, Senator Davis, Senator Egan, Senator Giesel, Senator Gardner. Oh, excuse me, Representative Gardner. It's anyway. I think that's all the elected officials that are in the audience or here in attendance at the Resources Committee meeting today. And we do have with us again today Commissioner Butcher, who is presenting Senate Bill 3001, which is the governor's bill advanced in this special session. So we welcome you today, Commissioner Butcher. Please state your name and affiliation. And for the record, we've been joined by Senator Thomas. Welcome. So, Commissioner Butcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Butcher, Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. And I believe we left off on slide 3. We had talked about the key provisions. We'd gotten down to through numbers 1 and 2. Number 3, it would be changing the maximum tax rate from 75% to 60%. Number 4 would be extending the 40% well lease expenditure credit to the North Slope. It's currently everything south of 68 degrees north latitude. And the final piece is allows capital credits to be redeemed in the year earned. It currently is spread over 2 years. We have heard companies, particularly smaller companies, say that it makes it more difficult for their cash flow to split it in half. It also makes it a little bit more difficult for the department to administer. So we would see a little bit of an increase in the first year. We would see a decrease in the second year, and then it would be revenue neutral.
Commissioner, Senator French has a question.
Thank you. Just on that credit change, would you just run through the bill? Because as I was looking through the bill yesterday, it looked like there were six or seven pieces that were retroactive, and I think it's pertaining to the credit pieces. Maybe not right now, but just make sure we're brought up to speed on how the bill touches this subject.
Sure. Through the chair, Senator French, when we work through the sectional analysis, we'll be happy to.
That'd be fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Stanton.
I'm just not, looking at forward in the presentation, so if I'm not quite sure where some of these areas are going to be discussed. But I'm just curious about the 40% gross revenue exclusion, the extending the 40% wellhead expenditure credit to the North Slope. Where's the analysis that backs up the need for that, Mr. Chairman, because we spent a lot of time at this committee, not so much on this committee, but another committee, and the conclusion was there was no need to move credits north. But the concern the state had is we have too many credits, so it's 180 degrees out from where we've seen the need for work to be done. So I'd like to see some backup on why that why there's a need for that.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, that's a piece you might remember from the 2010 legislation, House Bill 280, that ended up, as it went through, applying just to south of 68 degrees north latitude. It was the governor's bill that was then incorporated in HB 110, and that was as a result of companies saying that the economics that including a 40% well lease credit would change the economics to a degree that they would be able to get more oil out of existing wells. And I think as companies come up, producing companies on the North Slope, they'll be able to give you a little bit more insight into how that will change the needle and some of the things you might be looking at as a result of it.
Follow up, Senator Stedman.
Well, I think it gets to the discussion that we need to have here, and that's the risk exposure the state has of driving our production tax underwater when we have these huge credits swinging in against the Treasury. And then the recommendations we've had from at least one of our consultants that extending credits north of 20% gets a little dicey from the viewpoint of the sovereign, because we are allowing too much reimbursement from the state on capital costs. So if we're just to make the industry happy, we can make that 50%. They would like 50 more than 40 and 60 more than 50. But at some point, the state of Alaska needs to start, in my opinion, needs to start looking at its risk exposure, and we're not in the direct oil business, so we're a sovereign. So I'd like to see some backup information on this and the calculations derived with the rates of return and the expenditures, CapEx expenditures, that are expected to warrant this.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, we'll be happy to do that. This isn't about making the companies happy. This is about incentivizing more investment, more development, and more production. But we'll follow up with you on that.
All right, then Senator Wilikowski, then Senator McGuire, then Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the criticisms that we've heard over this debate from many, including the administration, is that the tax structure is too complex. And by adding this new provision saying that you calculate the ACES tax and then you do a 40% gross revenue exclusion for progressivity, is that making the system more complex or less complex?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I would say it's making it slightly more complex. And when we work through the worksheet, you can see that it's basically another line in the equation.
Just if I could follow up, Mr. Chairman. Why not? It seems to me that the basic ACES calculation doesn't apply anywhere now. The basic tax structure, 25% after $30 of profit, 0.4 progressivity, it seems that doesn't apply to anywhere anymore. Why not, instead of having this gross revenue exclusion on progressivity, why not just cut the progressivity if that's the intent is to just get taxes down?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that's certainly an option. Brackets, which is what we initially had proposed, is also an option. There's many levers that can be used, and certainly what you're discussing is one of them. We tried to use the same structure that the Senate had been using on the new fields and apply it to what we thought would be material to the existing fields, but it could be done in a number of ways.
You know, Commissioner, I think it'd be important for the listening audience to get a little flavor when we're talking about a 40% well lease expenditure credits, to explain to the public that for every dollar, you know, that the oil company invests, that they're getting 40 cents on the dollar, you know, in a credit form. And the question obviously is why aren't we getting an equity ownership? And again, going to Senator Stedman's question, well, 50% is better, 60% is better. You know, when should we get an equity ownership if we're paying 40%? So if you could please explain a little bit the concept of why increasing from 20% to 40%.
Sure. I'd like to ask our Deputy Commissioner, Bruce Tangeman, to respond to that, Mr. Chairman.
For the record, Bruce Tangeman, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. I think the most important thing to consider when we're talking about increasing that particular tax credit from 20 to 40% is we're talking about a tax credit that will be available to the taxpayers. A lot of these other tax credits that, and I agree with Senator Stedman, that we do have a generous suite of tax credits on the books right now. A lot of them are being enjoyed by companies that don't have any tax liability. So we're hoping down the road they find something that will bring new oil online that we can all benefit from. Taking this particular tax credit in this proposal from 20 to 40 will be beneficial to the companies that are actually paying a tax to the state now. So we will see a quicker return on our investment through this mechanism than the tax credits that are being used by non-taxpayers or explorers.
You know, Commissioner, one of the pieces of information that we received earlier was that Alaska, as far as its credit structure, is one of the most aggressive systems in the entire world, where, is there any substantive need out there that says that, you know, we're either number one or number two in the world right now as far as our aggressiveness? Is there, that there is a need to go even further in that regard?
Mr. Chairman, from what we understand in talking to companies, this would have an immediate benefit in terms of short-term production. In terms of where we stand in terms of credits, any of the OECD countries that we've dug into do not have the healthy level where we are. Some of the other countries with profit share agreements that basically take the concept of a credit but include 100% of the costs a company has, of course, go far and above where we go. But
Senator Stedman had a question.
Well, just for clarity, so we're all following along, not only would they have a 40% credit, but they'd have an immediate write-off of their capital expenditures.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, that's correct. Right.
So at some point, you know, we're going to be sitting here looking at a situation where we're dealing with the gold plating issue. And I think the previous numbers we looked at were somewhere up around $200 a barrel. The capital costs would basically be borne by the state and the federal government. And as that, you know, price is looked at it, 170 or 150 or 120, that percentage comes down. And I don't know what that percentage is under this $120 price range we're in now. So maybe you could help the committee with that.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, that is something that we can get back to you on exactly where that would be.
Senator,
to derive the 40% credit, I just assume that it was analytically driven, and 40% came out of the analysis. So you're telling me the analysis wasn't done?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, no, that's not what I'm telling you. The analysis was done on a bill that was drafted and presented before I ever became commissioner. I'm sure that information is available. I just don't have it in front of me today.
Is that something that you could get to the committee later today?
Hopefully, Mr. Chairman, yes.
Thank you, Senator McGuire.
Thank you. I guess just a 35,000-foot view comment about the process and about where I think we're probably going to head, just some advice. I mean, my advice is that the department continues to work on this issue, but in earnest, and running your own numbers, hiring your own consultants, and really looking at what systems are out there and what would be the best for Alaska. I mean, the concern I have about what we're doing right now is that it's unfair to the public, and it's unfair to the producers, and it's unfair to the legislature. Because we've been called into a special session with sort of a half-baked bill, and I mean that in sincerity. 110 was thought out, it was run through, the votes were taken fairly quickly on the other side. It came over here, and we spent weeks of analysis trying to figure out what the right solution was. In the end, there was a solution that would have included existing oil and incremental oil, but the votes weren't there. The support was not there. There was too wide of a philosophical divide. But at least that model, everyone who had worked on it understood where the triggers were. In this instance, you know, it's frustrating because you're in a position where you're trying to sell a bill that I just don't feel like you understand the ins and the outs of it. And I think that's an unfortunate position for you to be in, both of you to be in. I think it's an unfortunate position for us to be in, and I think it's a tremendous waste of government money and time. So I just say that I remain committed, I remain philosophically in alignment with the governor in the belief that we need to be competitive and that Alaska should be in that top tier of competitive nations out there. I think that we have so much growth potential, and I do think that reducing our government take will get us to that position where we can start developing these marginalized projects. And I do think it's about getting these existing companies as a part of the fold. The only thing we were able to come up with was New Oil, and I think it was a heck of a bill. I'm disappointed. You know, again, we tend as Alaskans to cut off our nose despite our faces, because I think that bill would have done a lot for that group. Granted, it wasn't the whole play. I recognize that. But this, going through this process and, you know, just basic questions about infield credits and, you know, can't be answered and what percentages are run and so on. And you guys are using our consultants, which I just think right there is just that whole branch of government violation issue. So I make these comments as a friendly voice to say that if we're serious about this, and we should be, because this is the economy of our state, this isn't the way to do it. And we all know it's going to end in a train wreck, and now it's just a matter of who gets to be blamed for it. And I think that's silly.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, what the governor was trying to do with this hybrid bill was to work within the structure that had been approved by this body. And as Senator Wilikowski and I were discussing earlier, we can get to the same place in a dozen different ways. And this gets to that same place. Is it what we proposed in HB 110? No, it's not. HB 110 was set aside. Is this exactly what the Senate had been talking about? No, it isn't either. But it's a combination of the pieces that the governor wanted to use to further the conversation.
Understand.
Commissioner Senator Stedman has a question.
Just kind of a comment, I guess, to follow up with both my colleagues across the table. The premise that we were operating under before this bill, and that we would have our legacy fields under some tax structure, and within that we would break out incremental production and incentivize them, and break out new production and incentivize them. This is just a bastardization of that process, because we've got this 40% allowance on the main field. So it doesn't work, and it doesn't fit into even the concept of what we had on the table. It fits the concept of what we had slightly for New Oil, but not for the legacy fields, not for the main legacy fields. We never had any discussion of having gross allowances on our main production pool. It was, how do you take that structure, the tax structure, whatever it happens to be on the main pool, and give it some allowances, either gross allowances or knock down progressivity, or just do some mechanism to help if it's incremental oil, new oil. And at one time in the earlier part of the conversation, we thought it would be heavy oil at the table, but we were told by the industry, we're too early, you know, don't spend your time on it. We'll come to you 3-4 years when technology improves, and we'll have a discussion if we need to at that time. So we ended up talking about incremental and new. So I think, you know, the fundamental building blocks in this bill are broken. That's my concern. And how do we get to where we want to go? But if where we want to go is just to move $2 billion at $120 a barrel, Senator McGuire said, there's no votes.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman.
Very few votes.
If I could interject, you know, in part the question is how does one, for example, this committee or anyone else in the legislature, use the governor's tax bill to address government take, for example, at that $120 or $140 a barrel, you know, the government take at high or very high oil prices, without giving away billions at $80 or $90 or $100 a barrel? And I don't see the structure present in this bill that can allow that to occur. So, Commissioner, what I'd like to do is receive your thoughts on that.
Sure. When you're trying to change a tax structure, in particular one that is extremely high compared to other jurisdictions that we compete with, in my opinion, it's virtually impossible to do that without actually reducing the tax rate at the dollar amount in which we, not only we see ourselves over the last 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, but also where companies make their decisions, where they say they look at things when they are making their decisions on whether to invest or not. And when a decision is made to make things revenue neutral at 100 or 110 or 120, basically saying we're okay where we are, we're just going to deal with dollar amounts that maybe we haven't seen in world history or in 1 month in world history, or in fields that we're not going to see production from for 10 years at best, it's accepting the decline that we're looking at over the last 10 years, accepting the level of investment that we've been seeing. And that's where the governor's coming from, saying we need the majority of the oil that we know is on the North Slope is in existing fields. If we're going to get anything done short term, it has to be done through tax rates. It has to be done potentially through credits. Doesn't have to be. Things can be changed different ways with different levers. And that's what the focus has been on, more than just what are we going to get in 10 years.
And to follow up, just to address both this.
I believe, is there something that needs to be added to the commissioner's statement?
Yes, please. To follow up on Senator McGuire and Senator Stedman's statements about the structure and why we're presenting this bill as we're presenting it, what we've heard from several on the private sector and several other oil jurisdictions is simple and stable. That's the way to go. Well, we haven't been simple and we haven't been stable for several years. The point, and when we get to slide five, we'll actually walk you through the calculations. The point of the way this bill was put together is that it is a simple calculation. And more importantly, it's working within the existing tax structure that's been in place since 2008 now. Something that the state in general has been beat up on is the tax division, the Department of Revenue, is always behind. We're outmatched, outgunned by the private industry and their economists, and they can throw more money at it and more economists. Today, right now, we understand ACES as well, if not better, than the industry, and Repsol's a great example. They came to us, and we had several meetings with them to explain the structure. So it's important, while we may not agree with the structure that we're dealing with today, it's important to be pointed out that we understand it as well, if not better, than the folks sitting across the table from us. So that's why we're making changes within the existing tax structure to not lose ground. If we throw the baby out with the bathwater and start over again, then we're going to be taking several steps back, and the private sector will be ahead of us and understanding it well before we can catch up. So that's why it's important to work within the structure, we thought.
But I guess this gets back to some extent the discussion in part that we had yesterday is whether there are economic or other categories of advisors that is advising the administration as to tax structures that might be able to address government take at high and very high oil prices. And what I'm understanding is that there may not be that ongoing at this time.
Mr. Chairman, no, there is that ongoing at this time. There has been. We have a very experienced econ group that has worked for many years through ACES, through PPT, through all of this. If the question is, are we expecting to have somebody sitting here with us to present the bill, the answer is not at this point, potentially down the road. That's a question. If the question is, do we have advisors, are we working internally, the answer is and always has been yes.
Well, if one looks at the $120 a barrel range, which is current Alaska North Slope pricing, that pushes across the table about $2 billion to the industry. Do you agree?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that it's that high. But
with credits? Just approximately. I know ultimately the question is the commissioner advancing the governor's oil tax bill as a take-it-or-leave-it proposal? Well, if it's $2 billion at $120 a barrel, that's where we're at, and that's what.
Mr. Chairman, it's $1.7 billion.
So is it a $1.7 billion or leave it type of tax bill, or what is it that you know, where is it that we're going?
Mr. Chairman, that's the issue that we need to work on. That's the issue that we had expected to work on last session, figuring out where that sweet spot is. We've come out with a proposal, the previous proposal, HB 110. Companies said it's a material change. Companies said it will increase investment. It will change the way they look at Alaska. We don't know definitively what they're going to say about this. Our first very limited input has been that they see it as a material change. And the question becomes, as we work together, where the sweet spot is that companies see a material change, and is it here? Yes, we believe it is. If we moved it a little bit, would it be there? It may very well be, and that's something we're certainly interested in working. There's no perfect number that if you're here, it's bad, and if you're here, it's bad, and if you're here, it's perfect. But we're excited to work with the committee to get to the point where we do reach that sweet spot.
Senator Wilikowski had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you, you've testified in the past that you believed ACES was competitive in the $60 to $80 range. I know the governor said that as well. Why, in this bill, by my calculations, we're pushing across over $500 million between credits and tax breaks to the industry at $80 barrel oil. Why would we push over $560 million across the table to the industry at a rate where you've testified it's competitive, the governor said it's competitive?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, it's competitive to the point where we don't think it's as punitive as it is at high oil prices. It's still far and above a higher tax. Even reducing it to where this bill would reduce it, we're still far and away above any other jurisdiction in North America. We believe that making this reduction would result in, if we do reach that area, the state of Alaska being more competitive. Does it have to occur? Probably not. If it occurs, is it going to increase our climate for investment? Yes, we believe it will.
Senator Stedman has a question.
You know, we brought this up yesterday. You know, it's, well, there was discussion that the industry would come forward with $5 billion of capital enhancements for incremental oil production to slow the decline curve down. Yet we've had testimony from another company that said we need $3 to $5 billion a year. I would like the department's estimate of what it's going to take in capital investment to get there. Is it $3 to $5 billion a year, or is it $5 billion over 8 years? And where's our break-even analysis? How do you justify what's in the bill? You know, I hear the comments, and I hear the philosophical opinions, but I don't see any substance.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, we've talked to DNR, and we hopefully can get back to you with a ballpark idea of the billions it would take. It would certainly be substantial. In terms of figuring out where to get back to zero, it's almost, well, it's not almost impossible. It is impossible to try to make some kind of estimate on where 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, we're going to be with billions of dollars of more investment and development and ultimately production. And we can talk, and we have, in a philosophical sense, of what different things would mean and how it would look on a curve and how it would look in terms of the state's finances. But to ask, can I say in 2017 and 2022 specifically where we're going to be and how close we're going to be to zero, I can't do that.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 40% well lease expenditure credit that you're talking about, is that, my understanding is that's stackable on top of the net operating loss? So in other words, that the development credits that are available would be 65%? Is that about the right number?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, this will affect, like I said before, current producers who aren't in an NOL status at this point.
So what would be the total amount of credits that a existing producer would be getting from the state of Alaska if we were to extend the 20% well lease expenditure credit to 40%?
I can get back to you with the exact, but you're going to have your 20% capital or 25% credits. There's more that are available. It's not just 40%, certainly.
So it's 40% plus 25%.
We can get back to you with all that they would have at their disposal to use.
And then the exploratory credits, my understanding is based on slides the department has presented in the past, that the exploratory credits are in the 80% range?
Again, we'll get back to you. We've presented this before, but we'll get back to you with the what all is available.
So if the state, Mr. Chairman, if I could, if the state picks up 80% of the exploration costs and now 65%, maybe more of the development costs, and we're lowering their taxes, at what point do we say we want to share? I mean, at what point does the state as a sovereign say, we're picking up the vast majority of the exploration costs, the vast majority of the development costs? At what point do we, harking back to Senator Stebbins' question, at what point do we take a stake in this?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the state has a significant stake in this already. We have royalties. When we eventually get to the slide deck, you'll see we bring in a substantial amount of money. So it's not a matter of we're giving it away and we're going to go broke. It's a matter of the state is still bringing in a significant amount of money. And the whole point of what we're trying to accomplish is, you know, we sat in this committee and finance committee and heard that the Senate majority believes that everything is fine under $100. Just to put that in perspective, since PPT passed, over 70% of the time has been spent under $100. We've had some peaks that obviously shot up. So the way we look at it is, if that's the stance the Senate is taking, then they probably believe that there hasn't really been a problem over the last couple of years. And some senators have actually said that things are fine. Based on the legislation that passed this body going forward, since new oil wouldn't be coming online for 10 years, it's only natural to assume that you think ACEs would be fine for the next 10 years also. And our point of view is we think there has been a problem over the last couple of years. And if decline is fine, then we've got the perfect situation in place. But we don't think the decline curve that we're on is fine, and that's what we're trying to flatten out and turn around. And again, we're not trying to do this in a vacuum and thinking that everybody else is going through what we're going through. We can look around at our competitors and see that they've turned their decline curves around. So that's what we're trying to do is incentivize investment here so we can catch up with our competitors.
I need to follow up on that, because Commissioner, here just a little over a year ago, you wrote in January 2011, and this is again a quote from the Department of Revenue, "While it is untenable to blame a tax system for the lack of industry investment, it is equally untenable to claim that the tax system is a reason increased activity or investment occurs." And then you continued, "An economic recession stifled investment in business activity in the United States and much of the developed world for over a year. The economic activity of the past 3 years may not have been the best benchmark by which to judge the impact of a tax system." Do you still believe that that is true today?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that, as Senator Stedman mentioned yesterday, there are many factors that play a role into this. Taxes certainly are one of them. Can you point at taxes and say that's 100% the only role that plays in why we're not getting the investment that other jurisdictions are? No, there's more to it than that. There's the high cost of doing business in Alaska. But have I learned a lot since that came out at the first month that I was commissioner? Yes. Have I talked to people in Alberta, in Texas, in North Dakota, and any place I could talk to about where their taxes are and where their investments are, and seeing a noticeable difference in the activity they're having and the noticeable difference in their taxes compared to our taxes? Yes. So it's been a learning experience.
So is it still true today or not?
Just what I said. There's some truth in that, but there's a lot of maze and there's no definitive answer to it, but it's become much more clear in my mind the major role taxes play in this.
Senator Stedman has a question.
I see a ray of hope here. If I can recap a couple of comments earlier, it appears that the administration's fairly comfortable, at least in their quotes, at $80 and below. The work that the Senate's been on looking at changes is $100 and above. So it looks to me like we got a $20 spread that we could talk about. But I know the committee, at some point, I assume all the committee members, would like to see, like we've done in the past with the previous bills, like to see a sliding scale in dollars running down from maybe $40 where we engage a floor or hypothetical floor that was talked about. And, you know, you can cut it off at 150, cut it off at 200. Cutting it off at 200 might sync up with some of the other data. So we can see how much cash we're moving around over what price range. Because if we, in this bill, are moving significant cash under $80, that's one set of issues in 70. And then we can talk about the magnitude north of 100 we're moving around. So, you know, it'd be nice to see that data.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, I believe that the upcoming slides show not on a dollar for dollar, but in a $20 or $25 chunks comparison between current law and what this bill would do. And we can certainly run specific dollar amounts, whatever you'd like.
I think we incremented it at 10 bucks to make it easy because we were looking at the economics at incremental oil. Excuse me, at new oil with a $34 capital cost. What impact that has on the results of the analysis if we change the tax structure, and we wanted to know the effects on the revenue stream. But if I could back up, Mr. Chairman, just really quickly to Senator Wilkowski's earlier comments, we should know offhand. And if you have a 40% credit and you have an immediate write-off of capital expenditures, which is what Senator Wilkowski was trying to get to, and fortunately he unintentionally misspoke, referring to it as a loss carry-forward, because there is no loss carry-forward to the guys that have the cash flow. The essence of his question is still valid. You know, what is that total between full write-off of capital expenditures, a 40% credit, and is there any stacking ability or other impacts? And what does that total package look like?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, the 40% would be in lieu of the 20% capital credit right off the bat, but I believe we have one of our master auditors online that can give you a specific answer to that. Is Lenny Dees online, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
I'd like to, rather than do that, I'd rather have the department think through their answer, respond back to us in writing with a table format, because it seems as they strive to answer some questions, things just get worse. So I'd rather have them think through their process and then respond back to us.
I agree, Senator, with Senator Stedman. Is that something, Commissioner, that we could have late this afternoon, possibly?
Yes, absolutely, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator McGuire.
Thank you. And just following up on the points that have been raised and what I was trying to articulate at the beginning in my comments, the 30% gross revenue exclusion for new North SLO fields, obviously the committee recognizes, but the addition of extending the 40% well lease expenditure credits to North SLO is going to impact that number as well. So I agree. I want to see, and that's a difficult one to calculate out because you don't know what well lease expenditure there would be. But I would like a tight definition of it to understand how you're it looks like you're patterning it after the Cook Inlet well lease expenditures. But so I want to see that, and then some hypothetical ranges with new North Slope fields. And then again, as Senator Wilkowski was saying, when you get into the gross revenue exclusion for calculating progressive tax, the 40% on top of that, then as well you're extending that 40% well lease expenditure credit, and as was just articulated, it's in the same year. So I think we need to think about how those numbers interact as well as was stated.
Mr. Chairman, Senator McGuire, they are all included in the slides upcoming, and also we do have estimates of, in the fiscal note, we estimate the 40% well lease expenditure credits to be $200 to $400 million.
Okay.
A year, and that is factored in when you look at adding up the effects of the bill in the fiscal note. It's a wide range for the exact reason you say. It's very difficult to figure out exactly what that is, so we wanted to be accurate to the degree we could on trying to put a range that we thought it would fall into.
Senator Stedman has a question.
Mr. Chairman, just as a reminder, and Senator Wagner and myself have fun with this one, but we both worked at the Resources Committee for several years trying to stimulate, along with Senator McGuire and some of the other folks here been on the committee for years, trying to incentivize Cook Inlet to get the production of gas up for the rail belt. And in doing so, in our exuberance, we've pretty much zeroed out the revenue to the state to get Cook Inlet back up on its feet and moving forward. And I'm hoping at some point in the future we could come back and revisit that for the sake of the Treasury, because it's running at a negative cash flow, is my understanding now. So when I see a replication of Cook Inlet into the Arctic, all kinds of red flags go up that we're not inadvertently destroying the revenue, so we don't end up with Cook Inlet version 2, because at the time we were dealing with Cook Inlet, we ring-fenced out Cook Inlet specifically so the huge physical impacts would not go into the Arctic because of the extent of them. And when you take, again, Cook Inlet to virtually zero for all practical purposes, I know my colleague across the table would like to hold it probably at zero longer than I would, but I think there's going to be some heated discussion here at the table if that's what surfaces underneath the covers of this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, I don't believe that that's what we're seeing under the cover of this bill. The main reason Cook Inlet shows that is it's a very low tax rate, and that's not something that we're proposing doing in this bill.
Okay. Commissioner, why don't we move on, and we'll try to get through some of these slides. And I know there's lots more questions that committee members are going to have. And I know one of the comments that I got from the public was to try to explain kind of what this gross revenue exclusion, kind of what that is. So, Commissioner, if you could proceed forward and give an explanation so that the viewing public can have a better understanding precisely what that term means.
We'll be happy to, Mr. Chairman. Slide 4 just caps over what we've talked about a little bit, which is where the pieces of the bill came from. The gross revenue exclusion from the Senate Finance Committee's version of HB 276, and then the production tax cap of 60% from the Senate Resources version of SB 192, and then the well lease expenditure credit, as I mentioned, came originally from HB 280 in the 2010 sessions. Original version, but also included in HB 110.
Slide 5 is the...
I believe the commissioner is presenting. So.
I'm sorry. I'd like Deputy Commissioner Tangeman to walk us through the worksheet.
Thank you. Slide 5 is the income statement format that we're used to seeing at the back of the revenue sources book. We've added column letters and row numbers to make it easier to point out where the exact changes take place. Column D is calculated under the ACE's existing structure, and column E is the SB 3001 tax structure. The nice thing about this format is it is unchanged all the way down to line 24. So again, this goes back to working within the tax structure that we are currently under, and it is a simple one-line calculation that we're proposing. This format is for the existing structure. The new oil would add one more line, but we'll walk through this just to explain what the gross exclusion means. So in cell E24, you see a reduction of $6.9 billion, and the way that's calculated, you're merely taking 40% of the gross value at the point in production, which would be E12, which is $17.4 billion. So that reduction of 6.9 is taken from your PTV. And before I go any further, I do want to point out that the progressive tax rate is calculated on the full amount, as if it were still calculated under ACES. So the base rate remains the same under existing. The progressive tax rate is calculated on the full PTV. The exclusion is then taken off of the gross value to get us to sell E25, which is $5.4 billion. The progressive tax rate that was calculated prior on the full PTV of 16.7% is then applied to that $5.4 billion. And that's where you get the new progressive tax itself. That plus the base tax is shown in E27. The delta below it would be a little over $1.1 billion. We do include the in cell E30 an increase to the capital credits from the 40% well lease, and then the calculation continues. But the point is, there's just one new calculation that takes place for existing wells. If we were looking at new fields, there would be one more calculation that would be shown that would affect the base rate, but that's only for the new oil.
Does this include, you know, the standard capital or the credits is about $800 million a year, $750 million a year? It doesn't seem, and I assume that under this analysis you've compressed all the credits into 1 year under this analysis, because that's what the bill does. Mm-hmm. So I don't see the additional $200 million to $400 million that we were talking, that you were talking about earlier, for the 40% well lease expenditure credit.
Chairman, the increase in $300 million in going from D30 to E30 is an increase in $300 million in credits. So that's the midpoint between the two and $400 million. Again, this is for taxpayers only, so we're not including the tax credits that are being taken advantage of by non-taxpayers or explorers.
Senator Stedman.
So we're 400 light on total credits.
Correct.
Roughly. Okay. So we can have negative four. But let's talk a little bit, too, about the capital expenditures. The capital expenditure line here, that's for what? And what's excluded out of that capital expenditure line? Because there should be about $500 million more if we're to look at total CapEx, as I recall.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, this is the FY 2013 capital and operating expenditure estimates. Okay. So I'm unclear what you're referring to.
So this is the entire capital expenditures applicable to the production tax value? Or is there any capital expenditures not reflected in here because you're excluding non-producing entities or any other anomalies?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, if you go to page 104 of the RSB, it's the exact same operating and capital expenditures that we've used in the fall revenue source book.
Doesn't answer the question. I suppose we can stop the committee and I can look it up, but it'd be easier just to answer the question. Is this all of the capital expenditures reflected into our production tax, yes or no?
Yes.
And if it's no, okay. That's what we want to know.
Commissioner, is there an answer?
The answer was?
Yes.
And?
Well, yeah, these are the deductible lease expenditures. Obviously, the companies are incurring capital expenditures that are not deductible. So these are the deductible allowable lease expenditures.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Senator Stedman, any follow-up on that?
No, I mean, it's just trying to get straight answers. Yes and no sometimes works pretty well in here.
Having a little difficulty at times with that. Senator French, do you have a question?
I do. I've got, I've been writing down lots of them, but I'll just focus on the one that's on my mind right at the moment, and that's on this chart here. I'm still fairly new to the finance table, so you have to go a little more slowly with me about numbers. I see this as a total, I'm looking at the bottom right-hand number, $1.464 billion. That'd be the difference between what ACES would collect and what this bill would collect.
That's correct.
Okay. I have a calculator here, and that, by my calculations, is about $4 million a day, or to the folks at home who need that broken down more, it's about $167,000 an hour, every hour, that we'd be asking the citizens of the state of Alaska to give up in exchange for something. And I think we've all agreed that it's not exactly clear what it is we'll get. We hope we'll get more investment. We hope we'll get more production, but it's not tied, at least as tightly as I'd like to see it tied, to more investment. And while I'm on the arithmetic, I guess I'd point out that under this bill that you and the administration are proposing, if we kept ACEs in place every 4 days, we could build a brand new high school. In 4 days, we could pay for statewide pre-kindergarten, something that I think after 12 years would produce citizens smart enough to figure out how to fix the decline curve. So it's something I believe in. I think just as tossing out an idea, let's go back to the oil industry. If oil wells cost, say, $20 million to drill on the North Slope every 5 days, we should see a new oil well drilled if we pass this bill, and that's 73 wells in a year. So you could consider setting some benchmarks out that would say, you know, if we were to pass this bill and if we did not see 73 new wells drilled next year, we would regret that. We would think to ourselves, we didn't make a very good decision. We only got 10 wells out of it, or 5 wells, or 20 wells, but it's not the 73 wells that we pushed across the table hoping that we'd get more investment. So we may, as we discuss going forward, consider putting in some benchmarks. I've even heard, Senator Begich spoke to a real estate crowd recently, and he was speaking in their language. They understand escrow accounts. And he said, why not put the money in escrow for a year and make sure that you actually get 73 wells, or you know, at least $1.464 billion in investment. It doesn't have to be wells. It can be maintenance. It can be turbine repair or pipeline pigging or whatever it is that the industry thinks is most pressing. But I think it goes back to the button. You know, we are in a relationship with a partner, and I think partners set benchmarks. I think they set deliverables. I think they set out their relationship in a formal way. And I'm concerned that this doesn't do that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator French, we have a difference of opinion, philosophical difference of opinion on that, I think. That, you know, when you look, when a company looks, when I look, you look at what a company would be paying in taxes in a lot of the jurisdictions that we compete with, I think you see, as Mr. Tangeman mentioned earlier, simplicity is a major, and in fact, Pedro Van Meer's led off with simplicity, 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 and I feel like we can get more and more complicated to the detriment of our state. But when we're looking at trying to incentivize investment, and we're looking at trying to get companies to invest in Alaska like they've been investing in other areas, the more strings we put on, the more complex we make it, the more difficult it makes it. So when you begin to weigh the benefit of one side, you have to consider the negative of the other side. It's not just a one-way street.
Senator French, follow up.
Thank you. You used the word strings, Commissioner. Are you saying that we should give them this money with no strings attached? Or shouldn't we at least set benchmarks? Shouldn't we at least say to the public, if we pass this bill and don't get the equivalent of 73 more wells than we're getting today, we've been fooled, and we did a bad thing, and we should revisit this decision. Shouldn't we at least have some measurable, deliverable investment activity in the state of Alaska from the passage of this bill, beyond saying we have a philosophical disagreement? I don't think that you and I disagree that we expect more investment in Alaska. We don't disagree on that point, do we?
Through the chair, Senator French, no. Our disagreement, I believe, is in, I think we've got excessively high taxes on the oil industry in Alaska, and I don't believe you feel that way.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. On that point, please let's don't do that. Let's don't characterize each other's positions on philosophy, because you and I haven't spent enough time together to get to know each other that well. Let's just keep it down to the facts in front of us, and I think that leads to a more productive discussion. Mm-hmm.
Through the chair, Senator French, I agree. You asked me the question, and I agree with you.
You do agree that you and I expect more investment from this bill?
Through the chair, Senator French, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
When looking at what this bill does and what we expect from the oil industry, I agree with you that we absolutely need the companies to step forward and to make a convincing case why this change, not specifically this one, it could be another one, makes sense for the state of Alaska, what the future looks like as a result of this. That, in that, I think we agree, and that needs to occur.
Senator Willikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is your best estimate of how many new barrels of oil we, the state of Alaska, gets if we pass this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Willikowski, I don't have a specific number. I don't think anybody has a specific number. When taxes are reduced, and Wood Mackenzie in their presentation to the legislature said this, 100% of jurisdictions that they had looked at that had reduced taxes saw more investment. I think most of us would agree that if a substantial change is made in our taxes, we're going to see more investment. How much more investment and what we're going to see, we can look at Texas, we can look at different other areas to get an idea. More importantly, we can hear what companies have to say about what they see as the prospects. Certainly there are new companies potentially that would be coming in that we wouldn't be hearing from, so we wouldn't be seeing the big picture, but that would play a large role on it. But as to a specific dollar amount or a specific place where I think that we would get as a result of this, there isn't an answer to that question.
Commissioner and Senator Willikowski, just in one moment. To get to the $1,464,000,000 figure that's on slide five, how many barrels of oil, assuming it comes from state land, would it take to get that money back?
Mr. Chairman, I would have to get back to you on that. I don't have it off the top of my head.
That's something you could get to the committee this afternoon?
I believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Willikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I would just point out that we did have testimony earlier in the year. I think it was Professor Gerking who testified after studying 50 years of production tax increases and decreases, found there was actually no correlation between taxes and more production. But I guess I would ask this of the administration. Would you support a provision in the bill that said if you produce X number of barrels in addition to what you're already producing, then you get your tax breaks?
Through the chair, Senator Willikowski, I think the administration would be willing to look at anything that would result in a material change in our taxes, that would result in companies making a material investment. And so just on a philosophical question, I couldn't say definitively yes or no to anything, but we'd certainly be willing to look at anything that we believe made sense and made a material change.
Senator Stedman.
That just begs the question, Mr. Chairman. Previous legislation, when we rolled out structural changes within ACES, flipping the progressivity from the net to the gross, the department virtually disappeared. So does the department support structural change and cleanup in the ACES structure, or are we just going to be forced into bastardizing the current dysfunctional structure?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, I don't know what you mean by the department disappeared.
It was apparent to the Finance Committee that there was a lack of enthusiasm by the department and the administration to move forward with the structural changes that the Finance Committee was looking for. It was also apparent, so apparent that even, I think it was viewed even outside the committee that was in fact what was going on.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, changing the ACES structure, and we've talked to the governor about this, changing the ACES structure does make things more difficult for the department. If it's a means to an end, if it gets us to a place where we have a material change, that's something that the department can take on. If it's a more complex structure that adds more administrative work to the department and we don't believe is a material change, well, then to us it's just another change to the structure of our taxes.
We're going to obviously have more time this morning to continue this discussion. We've been going at it for approximately 1 hour now, so we'll take a five-minute at ease back here in 5 minutes. Welcome back. It's the record should reflect. It's approximately 11:18 a.m. on this Friday after Friday morning. Commissioner, again, welcome back. We all took a little extended break. Everyone had a lot of coffee or water this morning, and certainly everyone's been talking about the slide five with all the numbers and trying to make sure that we appreciate the significance of them. So, Commissioner, you know, what we're hoping to do here in the next 15 or 20 minutes or so is allow you the opportunity to kind of make it through the slides. Would request that if there's a pressing or immediate question that a committee member might have, that, you know, certainly they can ask that. But what we'll try to do is get through the end of the slides and then allow the committee members to double back and ask the questions. And that way we can hopefully get the totality on the table. So, Commissioner, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think as we move through these slides, we've moved through a lot of the meat of the text and everything, and I think we're going to be looking at a lot of charts now and a lot of graphs. Slide six shows the effective production tax rate, post-credits for existing production, and we put, so you have kind of a barometer of where this bill is. The black line represents the current law, and the red line represents the governor's HB 110, and the blue line represents the bill you have in front of you, SB 3001. As you can see, it's a substantial tax reduction compared to current law. It's not quite to the same degree of tax reduction as the governor's original HB 110. Slide 7 shows the marginal government take for existing production. And seeing as we did not change the ACEs slope or where the trigger points are, the biggest difference between the SB 3001 you have in front of you and the governor's HB 110 is with a bracketed approach, it reduced the marginal rate a little bit more than this bill does, and then this bill does less than current law. Slide 8 and the next three slides will show, this was the best way we could figure to lay it out. It would be nice if we had all three in front of you at the same time, but this shows the absolute profit in $25 increments from $45 up to $270, with the blue representing the producer dollar amount in billions, the the green representing the state of Alaska, and the red representing the federal government on their take. And as you can see, at $120 a barrel, it's 2.7 for the feds, 9.6 for the state, and 4.9 for producers. If you take a look at the absolute profit for the governor's HB 110, once again using the example of $120, which is approximately where we are today, it's 3.4, and to the federal government, 7.6 to the state, and 6.3 to the producers. And then taking a look at SB 3001, it's a change of, once again, it's a little bit, the take to the state, a little bit less than, a little bit more than under HB 110, quite a bit less than under current law, with the producers receiving a little bit less than they would have under HB 110, but more than they would under current law.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator French.
Thank you. Just a question on the arithmetic between slides 8 and slides 10. At $120 a barrel, I see the difference under ACEs from ACEs to the bill in front of us as $1.7 billion. Am I doing that right?
Chair, Senator French, yes, you are.
Okay. And does that, going back to slide 5, is that all consistent? That is, at 109, it looks like 1.5, and if we go up 15 more dollars, 11 more dollars, I'm sorry, we go up 11 more dollars, the move is only $300 million more.
I'd like to ask our Assistant Chief Economist, Dan Stickle, to describe the discrepancy in the numbers.
Sure. For the record, Dan Stickle, Acting Assistant Chief Economist with the Department of Revenue. The income statement illustration on slide 5 is meant to present an illustration of how the production tax is calculated. And we did that, based on the 109 number. This looks at those companies that are paying the tax and is consistent with their revenue forecast. Whereas the...
This one, by this, you mean the slides?
The slide 5, correct.
Right.
And the absolute profit charts that we show are a homogenized example. So one of the big differences is here we're running everything as if this all the production in the state was one company.
You mean in the slides it's done that way? Or on slide 5 it's all
one
company?
In the absolute profit charts.
Okay.
So there is a little bit of a difference in the way you're showing, within the way you're looking at it.
If we took the slide, well, we'll just use this one as an example. If we took the slide 10 approach to the slide 5 calculation, would you expect to see the relationship that we see in these slides with respect to government give at each oil price level?
Senator French, through the chair, I believe you would see a similar level. You're going to get similar results, but if you're trying to exactly match up one to the other,
there's going to be a little discrepancy.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, does this include
get through these slides?
Does this include credits?
Senator Bilikowski, through the chair, yes.
Thank you.
Continue, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Slide 11 takes a look at the, instead of looking at absolute profit by dollar amount, we're looking at percentages. And so it just has a breakdown of the same three, which the first slide is a breakdown of percentages for ACEs. And the and once again, you look at $120, you can see 29% to the companies, 56, approximately 71% to government. Slide 12 was HB 110, which moved it approximately 7%. And then slide 13 is the bill in front of you, SB 3001, that moves it not quite so much, about 6%. With approximately 2/3 going to government and approximately 1/3 going to the producers. Taking a look at slide 14, this focuses specifically on new fields, and this also is post-credits. The black line, again, represents current law ACEs, with the red line representing the new fields component of HB 110, and the blue line, the new fields component of SB 3001. So as you can see, this would be a substantial reduction in current compared to current law. However, it would be not the not as extreme a reduction as HB 110 showed for new fields. Slide 15 is the marginal government take for new fields, once again showing the same kinds of curve for this bill compared to current law ACEs, just at a lower percentage. And then, as you can see, the bracketed line for the governor's HB 110 being below that. This is a breakdown, Mr. Chairman, of share of profits for new fields comparing ACEs, HB 110, and SB 3001. Obviously, there's not a dollar amount breakdown for this like we could show with existing fields because there's currently no production coming from these new fields. These are prospective new fields that would be developed. And looking at ACEs at $120, you're going to see a substantially lower take for government, the same under ACEs, but a substantially lower take for government and a higher take for companies under HB 110. at 41%. And then under SB 3001, also compared to current law, substantial reduction in government take and an increase in company take under Senate Bill 3001, once again applying to new fields that currently aren't being explored or developed. In summary, the provisions we put together for Senate Bill 3001 we believe represents meaningful change, change needed to incentivize development of Alaska's resources and incentivize investment, to stimulate the economic activity and to stimulate jobs and to have happen in Alaska what we see happening in most of the oil-rich jurisdictions in the world at the current high oil prices that we see. And producers have said they'll commit to additional investment contingent on meaningful change. As I mentioned yesterday, we haven't talked to any individual companies about how their view of this. However, we have spoken to AOGA, and they said that they would see this bill as meaningful change. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator Wilikowski has a question. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to get a list of all the commitments that you have received if for new development if we pass this bill. New fields, new projects, new developments.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we will get you the information that we have. You've all, I'm sure, seen the letter from Repsol and Armstrong about what new field development would mean in terms of their investment. As you know, companies are hesitant to make any dollar promises that aren't run through their boardrooms and don't take into account the particular period of time they may occur, the price of oil, the situation with their company in other areas. So I think you're going to have an easier time getting companies to discuss what it materially means to them and potentially what developments that they may move forward on that maybe they hadn't previously, and it's going to be more difficult to get a dollar amount, but we'll get you what we have.
Follow up.
Do you have commitments for new development if we pass this piece of legislation?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, other than Repsol's discussion of $9 billion, I haven't spoken to any companies specifically on that piece.
Senator Stedman.
Just as a note and a follow-up to Senator Wilikowski, I think it's important to differentiate new production dealing with Repsol, because that's a little different tax structure, than incremental or legacy field production. And maybe the commissioner could differentiate that when he responds back to us on the answer.
That would be, I believe, most important for this committee to see the distinction in these promises as comparing the new fields and within the legacy fields, incremental promises, and you know, potentially even distinguishing between the debottlenecking issues and true new developments within the legacy fields, if that could be possible.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. We will get you the information that we have. And obviously, in the short term, increasing development, increasing production is going to come from the existing fields. Long term, it's also going to come from the existing fields where heavy oil and viscous oil, the majority of it is, but it's also going to come from new fields.
Senator French and Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It does say questions, so I guess we have a chance now. I guess we maybe jumped the gun for the last 2 days, we can always start again. One of the things that the last couple of years has done for us, I believe, is bring the debate into sharper focus. And I think, you know, Senator Stedman was pointing out how we actually may be closer on the numbers than we think. You know, we agree on new oil. I think we have all decided we agree on new oil. I think the House had taken up that bill. It would have passed with the same sort of majority that it passed out of our body overwhelmingly. And so I think what we're, you know, if we're going to focus on something now, we're probably focusing on aging an aging conventional reservoir, right? That's where we are. That's what, you know, you and your group has told us that we have to focus on. That's where the legacy oil is going to come from. And so earlier this year, you know, you and I talked about Texas and whether the new production in Texas was conventional or unconventional. And I'm not even sure we ever totally resolved that. But I guess my question or my request would be that you bring us examples of aging conventional reservoirs that have had their production turned around through tax changes, and because that I think would be persuasive to me and others who are looking for ways to get more oil out of Prudhoe and Kuparuk. I think it's very, very difficult, I see the future of Prudhoe and Kuparuk as being in heavy oil. I think that's where the new production is going to come from, not out of the existing Sadler Roach reservoir at Prudhoe and the other reservoirs at Kuparuk. So let's focus on that, and let's see if we can maybe come to agreement on that and see what is holding us up, what can make that reservoir give us more oil, because I think we're sort of standing like King Canute in front of the tide saying we're trying to stop the decline of something that's just physically impossible to stop. Reservoirs decline. If there's one out there that doesn't, bring it to our attention, and I think that'd be helpful. Thank you. One other follow-up about new oil, because this idea that it's going to be take 10 years to get new oil online, I think is generally true, but maybe not specifically true. And the one specific area that I'm going to be spending a lot of time on in the next couple of weeks is shale oil. I know that the shale oil developments on the North Slope are taking place alongside the pipeline corridor. So they're very, very close to that pipeline that we need to get more oil into. They're not far flung. They're not 100 miles away. They're right there. So the idea that it's going to take 10 years to get shale oil in the pipeline, I think, may not be true. It may be closer to 3 or 5, and we don't know until we drill the wells. But bringing us some information about how long it takes, you think that the shale oil wells will start delivering oil into that pipeline would be interesting to me as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you so much. And I want to say thank you to the team. I hope you interpret my earlier comments as not you in a decision-making capacity inserting yourself at this point. With the information you have, certainly you don't. You're the commissioner. My criticism is meant more broadly to say that there is a time and a place to continue this discussion, but I question sometimes if holding people hostage and making them feel forced into a situation is always the best idea. Special sessions in my past history have never really produced results. And on a subject like this that is so complex, I think it's going to be difficult, but I wish you well. In light of that, as you're coming back with the data that people have asked, one of the things you might consider is how the Finance Committee started to review things and look at those charts and really understand that that's the way our brain started shifting. And to that end, we started looking at life cycle economics as opposed to that snapshot page 5. That was where we started with House Bill 110. But you never were really able to move the members beyond that because we just kept bickering back and forth about whether the FY 2013 projections were right or not. And does that make sense? So life cycle economics. And then the other thing that we did is we started looking at what's the difference between a 10,000 barrel a day field versus a 200,000 barrel a day field, and how do those look when you play them out. So I think that would be helpful to convince the group. And like I say, you're searching for those votes that are in that margin. You sort of know you've got some of those like me that are more fiscally conservative. You've got others that are over here. But you're searching for that margin, as you called it, that sweet spot. And I agree with you that it's never going to be perfect. And there'll always be people that walk away and say, we wish we'd gotten this or that. I question whether we can do it now. Let it continue on and let's discuss it. But I think unless we start looking at charts that mimic the process that we've gone through with that level of detail, you'll always just sit back and be criticized for not giving that straight question, that straight answer. You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, and through the chair, Senator McGuire, we can do that. We certainly have the wherewithal to go through all of this.
And my last point, if I might, Mr. Chairman, I know when we talk about the North Sea and other elephant fields, and I do think that's an excellent point that Senator French made, there aren't that many globally, but you can look at them and see that there is a natural decline rate. He's right. There's a certain amount of oil that's left in a well, and it depends on economics, and they're marginal, whether or not they're going to continue drilling out of that particular well or just cap it off and move on. And I think whatever research you can do on that, whatever consultants you can get on that, data you can get that shows this committee sort of where is that point where you're going to incentivize a company in an existing elephant field to continue to suck out and bring that well up out that oil up out of that well, that adds measurable volume to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, a measurable amount to the economy. And I think if you could make that case, that an overall reduction in tax rate will bring an increase in volume, and together those two will align, that's where you're going to bring Alaska with you.
Thank you.
You know, Commissioner, I know that one of the key points of discussion that has been occurring is, you know, at the various committees, there's been numerous testimony that's been received from both the oil industry, the Department of Natural Resources. There's numerous petroleum engineering articles that say achieving an increase in production from the legacy fields is unlikely. And, you know, there was even a Department of Revenue a statement in 1994 that indicates that production decline was irreversible. And, you know, there's a suggestion, again, on page 3 of the fiscal note, that we can see an increase in production. And, again, that goes back to my question yesterday, is where does that come from? And, you know, so what I'm looking for is, with respect to the legacy fields and this infield drilling, is there a Society of Petroleum Engineers article that says you can reverse the decline in the Alaska legacy fields? And then the second point is you've mentioned investment, but the question is if that investment is for the standard debottlenecking, then we will stay within that hyperbolic decline curve. But what evidence might there be that you have to indicate that the legacy fields do not stay in the harvest mode, which we've received substantial evidence of that they've been in for many, many years, and as much as a decade or a decade and a half. And so those are some of the issues that I'm hoping that you could talk with us about right now.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're going to get a lot of insight on those from the companies that are actually working and producing those fields. The companies that are actually saying, if there's a tax reduction, there are things we can do, and here are the things we can do.
Again, do you believe those to be able to produce a 10% increase above current forecast? And again, if we're excluding shale and excluding heavy and excluding the federal OCS, limiting it to the state land, northern central slope, do you believe that you... I mean, it's one thing to talk theory, as you mentioned yesterday, but do you believe that there is an economic engineering basis to get there?
Yes, I believe that we could, if not from, you know, total production, but from that production decline in not a year, but in a relatively short period of time.
Senator Stedman.
I'd just like to recall testimony from ConocoPhillips. When the question was asked about incremental or increasing production, there's technology barriers that you're going to run up against regardless of your tax structure. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd recommend we go back and review that soundbite from ConocoPhillips' tax guy, because that question was delivered down the table. And at some point, technology blocks it, regardless of how much money we throw at it. And it may be a lot closer than we imagine from recalling his testimony. Closer as far as, if you're going to try to get to 700,000 barrels a day, is the technology even in place to get there out of the legacy fields?
I think we need to look at that. I believe that Senator Stedman is referring to the March 1, 2012 testimony before Senate Resources Committee by Mr. Scott Jepson. He's the vice president for ConocoPhillips, and specifically he indicated in a response to a question as to the million barrel goal, he indicated that while it's a good aspirational goal, he didn't think we can get there. And again, talking about the technologies of the potential for shale, the potential for heavy oil. But again, what I would like for you to do with the legacy fields, the existing fields, is come back with some article to show that we can achieve an increase in production from the legacy fields beyond the standard debottlenecking that will just keep us within the standard decline curve that the industry has indicated for decades we're not going to get out of. You know, is there something that you know of that's not been presented by industry that isn't a published journal in the Society of Petroleum Engineers that's different than even a month and a half ago the Conoco testified?
Mr. Chairman, I think if you're talking about getting to 1 million barrels a day, and that's certainly a laudable goal, and hopefully someday we can get there, my more immediate goal is just to flatten out our curve. If the state could flatten out its decline curve and start to turn it around, that would be a huge, certainly first step. And so when Mr. Jepson, and I wasn't in the room when he had the conversation, there's a difference between going from 580,000 to 1 million and 580,000 to 600,000.
Senator Stedman.
As we work through this process, Mr. Chairman, we can go back and check the record on that. That discussion, I think it was at the finance table, is the one that I recall. But we should be able to quantify what it would take as far as industry effort to get to 600 and stabilize 600, and if we were to go to 650 or to 700 or some number. But as I recall, and I mentioned yesterday, the testimony from Exxon, who were working in a Chuck equivalency, $3 to $5 billion a year, just to stabilize where we're at today. I think, and I have no clue what it would take to get to 650 or 700. But if we're talking that magnitude just for stabilization, $5 billion over 8 years or so doesn't cut it. So I think there's some work to do in this arena, Mr. Chairman.
I think the entire committee agrees with that, Senator. And Commissioner, we were going to look forward to, as to the existing fields, the analysis and how we might get there. In part, Commissioner, yesterday there were discussions about government take, internal rates of return, net present value, basin progressivity, many of the engineering realities of the treatment facilities and the constraints that we have on an engineering basis as to conventional oil throughput. And again, specifically addressing the governor's bill that is before us, is that if the administration is not looking necessarily to government take and internal rates of return or net present value or basin progressivity or the engineering constraints, you know, the question of many Alaskans is the motivation just to push billions of dollars across the table. In other words, many Alaskans are wondering that.
Mr. Chairman, we've looked at all of the things you discussed in developing this. Where we got to in the existing fields piece of this was modeling the structure from the new fields off of what we had come up with a year and a half ago, which took all of those things into consideration.
And again, what I'm trying and focusing on page 3 of the fiscal note, and the bottom portion appears to deal with the production tax revenues alone. And as I'm reading this, is for FY13, assuming you were to have a production increase of 50 to 60,000 barrels a day, meaning forecast plus 10%, is that an accurate way to read that?
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to understand is that even assuming we had those 50 to 60,000 barrels per day for a year, which I think is over 18 million barrels, that even producing 18 million more barrels in a year, we're still a half a billion short in production tax alone, even with that increase in production.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think you have to look at when you make a tax change out long term and not out just 1 year or 2 years or 5 years. If you're going to get a lot more investment and a lot more development and eventual production in the field, certainly, hopefully in new fields, but obviously much of it has to occur in existing fields, you have to look at it over a long time frame, because certainly short term you're going to deal with a reduction in revenues. That's what's going to happen initially upon the passage of a tax bill that can't result in immediate production. You have to look out in the out years more than just, say, in 2013.
Senator Stedman.
Just bring back to the same comments, you know, $5 billion over 7-8 years. Our consultant said we'll have a hard time even seeing it on the chart. That's how insignificant that is. So we don't need $5 billion over 8 years. It sounds to me like we need almost that amount every year. And we haven't had any testimony from the industry that I could recall, other than queuing us up to the magnitude, that magnitude is going to get delivered.
Well, through the chair, Senator Stedman, I agree we're going to need more than $5 billion, but I don't think $5 billion is a cap. I don't think meaningful change in company testimony on this and a discussion of $5 billion by companies is the only new investment we would receive as a result of this bill. I think we'd see billions more than that. Are companies willing to come forward and say $1 billion more, $2 billion more? Well, that's awfully difficult for a company to do.
Just as a quick follow-up, and I don't want to, you know, be argumentative, and because we're early in this process, but I think DNR and revenue should be able to get together and give us an estimate of what it would take financially to do it, rather than lob the ball over to the industry. And if there's no way we can get there, we need to know about it, rather than pass a piece of legislation, check back in 10 years. It's been at the middle of this table before what happened to the state with or the impacts with Kaparik. And I think the Finance Committee is going to have our consultants review the history of Kaparik and come back next winter with a report to us on how effective driving our severance tax to zero was. And I'm not optimistic it's going to be very positive, even though I heard some projects that came forward from the testimony from ConocoPhillips, but we'll let the consultants sort all that out and put some numbers on it.
Commissioner, I guess just as a one component of the governor's bill specifically dealing with new fields, and is my perception internally on the Senate side is that the Senate found most persuasive the Armstrong Repsol $9 billion for new fields. In other words, these are the independents that we're hoping to attract to Alaska, other of the world majors that we're hoping that will find Alaska attractive to go to areas where there currently are no roads, there are no pipelines, and they have said $9 billion that they are interested in opening up these new frontiers in Alaska. And, you know, so that is why on the Senate side, we to some extent found that the sweet spot that we wanted to promote, and they seem to be advancing the $9 billion as this is their first project out. So, again, the Senate has, so to speak, indicated during the regular session what it considers the sweet spot, and we're looking very seriously. We want you to come forward as to the existing fields to show why somehow or another the $5 billion in fields that have been in harvest mode for many years might be at all meaningful.
Mr. Chairman, as you know, referring to the new fields, that is a positive step, but as we've discussed before, AOGCC says the average is 10 years out, and unfortunately, looking at the decline curve between today and 10 years from now, we're going to be in a substantially difficult situation revenue-wise if just deciding we're going to take this decline for 10 years and then hope that it picks up in the out years. The vast majority of the oil we know is available on the North Slope is still in the existing fields, and if we don't focus a great deal on that, I think things are going to get difficult in this state in the next 10 years.
Well, again, Commissioner, my view, again, may be a little bit more optimistic than yours in the sense that there's been comments regarding shale, and I believe that the tax structures that we have for the new fields here will spur the shale, and that, you know, that is not even included in the $9 billion for the the new fields that we've discussed. So, in other words, I'm more optimistic that we can have increased conventional oil production. It's an unconventional in the sense of the shale, but those will be in the new fields, and then to try to attract the Armstrong with Repsol and potentially other independents to Alaska, that we can get there sooner, and then we start incrementally feeding with the heavy oil to where I think over the next 20, 30, 50 years, there's an extremely promising future for Alaska. So I guess I don't want to have the public go into a fear mode that somehow or another Alaska is shutting down, because I think that that's not an appropriate message to be sent from, at least from the Senate. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be interested in getting a lot more information about how us passing this tax break is leading to more development in the near-term future. I want to know where it's coming from, what projects, what developments, what fields. Can you tell me that? Can you tell the committee that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we've discussed this before. There are companies that are producing in the field that can talk about what they would see as things that could happen in the short term. The previous bill we had in front of you, they'd never had the opportunity to have those conversations, and I feel like it would be enlightening if they did under this bill.
Mr. Chairman, this bill is being touted by you, by the administration, as solving the short-term problem we have. And are you sitting, as you sit there telling this committee that you have no idea where a single project would occur if we pass this tax break?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we're not saying this solves the short-term problem. It's not going to be easy to turn it around. Do we believe this is going to improve it? Absolutely. Do we believe that the existing fields, the legacy fields, are going to be able to take more oil out of the ground because the economics are going to be better? Yes, we do. And that's where it's going to occur. Do I have a specific name of a spot and a dollar amount and a barrel as a result of that? No, I don't.
Follow-up, Senator.
Just so we're clear, when you say, when the administration says, by passing this piece of legislation, this will increase, put more oil in the pipeline in the short term, you can't point to a single project or development to support that assertion. Is that correct?
When I, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, when I say that this bill would improve the investment climate and improve investment and ultimate production, both short-term and long-term, I think that that will be supported by testimony of the companies should they have an opportunity to testify.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you. I'm going to make another just request to both to you, Commissioner, and to the companies, that I think one of the things that ended up moving my colleagues on this side, who might have been even more reluctant to give up government take for the new fields, just as an insider, what I can say is that it was the definitive nature of the testimony. It was definitive. It was clear. These are the projects we want to move forward with. These are our partners. These are the agreements we have in place. We can move forward if we can have a government take number that is in the zone. And they were willing to tell us what that was. And I think I don't disagree with you that general economic policy says that the less government take you have, the more profit you leave with an industry, the greater the odds are that they're going to invest. I don't disagree with that premise, but what I think the members are struggling with that you can hear is sort of in this area of a declining elephant legacy field, where are the margins that you can capture? And at what point do you need to move the needle? And you can hear what they're saying. They don't want to move it any farther than they have to. It would be helpful if the companies, as they make their, I understand, 10-year and sometimes 20-year capital expenditure, I guess you'd say, predictions. They come up with what they'd like to see in their region. They all go to the head shed, and they battle it out over where these dollars are going to go. And we've talked about this a lot. You've talked about this. The governor has, that we want to be in the center of that debate. We're not even in the center of that debate, according to ConocoPhillips and some others. When they show us the 10-year projection, they say Alaska's not even in the room. We want to be in the room, but it would be helpful if when the companies come forward, or if you as a liaison to them could say, for the next 10 years, Exhibit A, this is what it would look like if we kept the current regime in place. This is the kind of capital expenditure you're going to see. Exhibit B, if you adopt something like 3001, this is the difference in what you're going to see. And I think that's what you're hearing people say. I agree that it's not that a company can sit down and say, this amount right here, this, but general ideas of what capital expenditures would mean, because then we can extrapolate that out and say, okay, for the support industry, that's this many more jobs, that's, you know, meaningful investment. And I hope you can hear that that's the conversation that's going on. And I don't really think it's this giant, vast cavern. If we can start, you know, use that Repsol example of the detail, and I think that that's going to get you farther.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator McGuire, I agree with you. And from the very beginning, the governor has said, you know, we can lay out what we think the problem is. We can lay out what we believe the solution is. But ultimately, companies are going to have to come forward and make a compelling case as to why passing this makes sense. And government isn't going to play the major role in that piece.
To some extent, I believe, Commissioner, that members of this committee and maybe other members, elected officials from the other body, were potentially looking possibly to Gaffney-Klein as to their analysis or their thoughts on why Senator McGuire's question would be directly answered. So I think that's something that we appear not to be receiving from industry analysts in support of the governor's bill. Anyways, Senator Willekowski.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a statement, Mr. Chairman. I have great discomfort at the legislature, at the administration, setting policy that will result in the loss of potentially billions of dollars based on what the industry says. I mean, the industry will always ask for more tax breaks. They will always ask for more tax breaks. That's their job. Our job should be to go out and hire experts, the best in the world, to advise us. We shouldn't be basing policy on what the industry says, because the industry will always say they want less taxes. They will always say that. We shouldn't set the destiny, the future of our state, based on what industry says. It should be a calm analysis based on what experts say, based on their analysis of what we should be doing as a state, what represents, provides maximum benefit for the people of Alaska. So I guess I think we do need Gaffney and Klein back here. That would be my request for the administration. Don't rely on what the oil industry says. If the oil industry comes in and pans your bill and says, well, this isn't going to lead us to enough investment, I don't think that should dictate where we go. I think it should be based on what the expert analysis says, what the internal rates of return say, what the net present values show. Just a statement, Mr. Chair.
Through the chair, Senator Willekowski, and that is, we didn't base a decision to bring a bill forward on, and the industry has to say something, but that is the end of it, influencing how industry changes, trying to affect change, plays a role. To pretend as if government plays the entire role and that the results of companies discussing what this means doesn't play a role. We looked and we saw the highest taxes in North America. We saw, and PFC Energy showed, the second highest of any OECD state or country. And $140, we shoot past Norway. We're number one. We're taxing more than anybody. We're not getting the kind of investment that we're seeing in North Dakota, Alberta, almost any oil jurisdiction you look at. We're not receiving it. The problem's obvious to us. When you ask for specifics on what a company is going to invest or what projects that a company currently has leases on they're going to develop, those are answers that are appropriate for them to answer. They need to deal with their boardroom and having to work through all that, but expecting the government to somehow interpret from them what that is, I think is asking too much of government.
Just Senator Wildehouse, we don't want to replow the last 3.5 hours.
Good philosophical debate, Mr. Chairman, but I guess I would just remind us that we've plowed this for 30 years. We had a tax structure called the ELF, where we had a 0% tax rate on all new fields, on satellite fields. By 2006, we had a 0% production tax rate on 15 out of 19 fields. We had oil hitting record prices from the years 2000 to 2006. We had Kuparuk at a 1% tax rate in 2006. We had an 8% decline in Kuparuk. We had BP saying that the role of Alaska in their business portfolio is to be a cash cow, to take money from Alaska so they can invest it elsewhere in the world. So this philosophy of low taxes, what it got us was a decline of 2 million barrels a day in the 1980 or so to 750,000 barrels a day. It got us a decrease in jobs, a decrease in production, a decrease in investment. Those are facts. So this philosophy that you lower taxes, that's going to lead to some sort of explosion in investment, we had 30 years of that policy. It cost the state of Alaska hundreds of billions of dollars. I don't want to go back to that policy, to that failed policy. That is a mistake.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, during that period of time, the price of oil was $20, $25 a barrel. The economics on increasingly high to operate fields in Alaska just didn't make a lot of that economic. We're now at $120 a barrel. Much more, and along with technological improvements, it's a different world we're living in today than in those $20 a barrel world, days.
Commissioner, you know, there's a quote. There is a quote from Lord John Brown from BP from 2002 that discusses high oil prices, and at that time it was $20 a barrel. And the specific quote is something along the line of that they're going to strip the excess cash flow out of Alaska. And so, again, I would be very cautious in saying that we're in a different environment because prices are at $100 a barrel. As you know, in other words, it's relative to high oil prices, but Lord John Brown said at what was then high oil prices, they intended to strip the excess cash flow out of Alaska. So anyway, Senator French.
Just on that last point, the administration has more than once asserted that oil prices were at $20 a barrel when the Kuparuk tax rate reached 1%, and that's just not factually true. I welcome the consultants taking a look at the Kuparuk field and what the production rates were and what the oil prices were, because it's historically true that around 2001 or two, oil prices began to go north of $20, and by 2006, when the Kuparuk River field, the second largest oil field in North America's tax rates, approached 1%, that we were getting up in the $50 to $60 range for oil. So the public needs to know that it's not the case that that was a different era of oil prices. And we can all remember the joy we felt as a state when oil prices began to go north of $30. This was fantastic news. That happened in plenty of time at Kuparuk at a absurdly low tax rate for massive investments to take place, given that the economics of that field were based on $20. When you suddenly double the price of oil, that's a windfall. That's an enormous amount of money. I worked at that field for 8 years of my life. I know something about it, and I'm fascinated that we're going to have a study done of it. Thank you.
Senator Stedman had a question.
I just remind the committee, because it was up the finance table, but we had our consultants go back to the beginning of the opening of the Arctic and put the gross revenue in $2,010. Because it's pretty easy to talk about $20 a barrel oil, but if you don't talk about the production, you miss the point. I think you guys will be surprised when you look at the gross value of our oil basin. It's going to surprise you. I think in the worst year, it was about $10 billion. So my initial impression is there is no way that Kuparuk was a marginal field. Absolutely no way. We're going to find out because we're going to go in there and parse in the expenses that we can and do some analysis on that. So I am concerned that that game gets played again. And it is on point. We just don't have the time to do that part of the analysis and bring it into the middle of the table. We could grab the gross revenues and grab a few points in time. But anyway, just for the committee members, they can go into the Finance Committee documents and the public, if they're online, and take a look at that, that chart. We have an extremely valuable oil basin.
It appears we're at the end of this session. Commissioner, I'm certainly looking forward over the last couple of days. There's been quite a number of requests for, I think, very detailed and substantive information, and we look forward to receiving some of that this afternoon. And for committee members, purposes of the schedule, I will hopefully be meeting with Commissioner Butcher later this afternoon or early next week. And given the status, my estimation is it would probably be midweek next week at the earliest, while the commissioner assembles some of this substantive information. And again, even with the email that I provided to the department here a couple of days ago, addressing the issue of the modeling and what access committee members may have to that, so that we can get into the substance, so that we can try to find at least factually what your facts are, so that we can try to find common ground based upon at least the common modeling issues. But given that, the Senate resources for Friday, April 20th is adjourned.